When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everyone, Yas here, and I just wanted to say it's great to have you join me today because I'm sure we're going to have another fantastic episode. So whether you're here for the first time or if you're one of the repeat loyal listeners of the show, I truly appreciate you. But before we get to today's guest, I just have a small favour to ask, and that's if you could just take a brief moment to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Ensure that you share it with all your coaching friends, and don't forget to get in touch, guys. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of today's episode or any of the recent episodes you've listened to. You can do this on Twitter at The Coaches Net. Once again, that's at The Coaches Net. And please make sure you do, as I'd love to hear your thoughts, guys. Anyway, on to today's show. I hope you enjoy it. Have a great day, guys.
The Coaches Network.
Hey, guys. You're now listening to The Coaches Network podcast, a podcast aimed at anyone who's passionate about athlete, talent, and personal development. My name's Coach Yas, and I'm a UEFA A-licensed football coach developer, and content creator. I'll be sitting down with a range of guests to discuss their journeys, their life lessons, and how you can make an impact. Enjoy. Right, guys, welcome back to the Coaches Network. My name's Coach Yas, and I've got a very special guest with me today. My guest today is Cody Royal. Afternoon, morning, Cody.
Morning, just. Yeah, g'day, Yas. How are you, mate? It's good to be here.
I'm very well.
I'm a big fan of what you've created, so thanks for inviting me on.
I really appreciate that, but I'm really well, and I'm really excited for this one. So, Cody, just then before we get into the thick of it, maybe just a brief insight around who you are, what you do, so the listeners can kind of just build a picture there.
Yeah, I don't belong here. I'm an Aussie rules coach. So AFL is my sport, that crazy sport that you might have come home from the bar at 2 a.m. and flicked on, I think, Sky down in Australia. So played a little bit in the talent pathway there, coached a little bit in the talent pathway there, moved to Canada when I was 25, was going to do the typical Aussie thing of just spend 2 years overseas and then go home with all intentions of coaching in the AFL pathway, and got here and loved it in Toronto, Canada. Ended up coaching the national team here for Aussie Rules for about 10 years. I'm a writer by trade, so I wrote a couple of books about my experiences in coaching, and those two worlds combined as a result of doing that. And now I just work one-on-one with other head coaches from all sorts of team invasion sports all around the world, including with some of the guys at the FA and the Premier League.
Awesome. Cool. I'm going to dive straight in there on the back end of what you've just said. Obviously, working with head coaches one-to-one, how did that come about? How did that even become a thing for you? And what are some of the key things that you've picked up along the way in terms of that are consistent things that coaches of all levels are really facing challenges with?
Yeah, so, I mean, I work at the high end, so the professional end, you know, mostly men's senior football. And so... I'll start there. It's not everyone's challenge is the same, but that there are similarities. How it ended up coming about was I wrote a book called The Tough Stuff, which was about the emotional toll of head coaching. I went through an experience deep into my journey, maybe 8 years into being a head coach, and I thought I kind of knew everything there was to know about coaching. And, you know, I was the typical kind of arrogant 30-something-year-old coach. It was like, yeah, I've been doing this. I got this clocked. And I had a player take his own life. And, yeah, that completely threw me through the ringer. Then you realize what it's all about and that it's not about X's and O's and or not as much as we say. And, you know, when you have to lead 50 young men through the grieving process, you really have to kind of smarten up your leadership. And so I went looking for resources and couldn't find anything. And so that's hence why I created something that I thought was missing in the world. And off the back of that book, I started getting, no joke, Yas, daily DMs and emails from coaches saying, oh my God, I need to talk to you. Like this is my experience as well. This is my lived experience. You know, the hard things in the job, the identity, the criticism, the you know, letting go. You know, the kind of the things that we need to deal with personally as head coaches. And so, yeah, people started asking me to work with them. So I can't say I did it by design. I just created something out of my experience, and that's resonated with others. And then the calling felt too strong, or maybe the messages were too frequent for me to ignore it from there. And so that kind of became my pathway into just working one-on-one with the coaches. And where I focus is really on their well-being, for starters, because that's one thing that's massively overlooked. But ultimately, well-being is about performance. You know, we call it a pillar of performance. And so it's not about just being well. It's about being able to perform at a high level. And well-being is one part of that.
There's a lot in there, but, you know, first of all, thank you for obviously sharing that with us. You know, it must have been a difficult challenge for you in the initial stages, especially kind of a bit of a shock, really, isn't it? You kind of put you through a system where it's almost like, right, you're very much focused on one set of things, and then all of a sudden something like that happens. Do you have to change your perspectives on things? And I guess, yeah, you've got 1,000 questions rolling through my head right now. I think the first one I'd ask is this, you know, obviously, you know, you've now delved into that line of work where you're supporting head coaches and coaches alike. Where do those conversations start? And I've got a, you know, feeling that you're probably going to say around that well-being piece, it's almost checking in with yourself, because I think it is definitely something that coaches of all levels, probably more so at the top end than any other, often forget to do. It's just checking in with themselves and making sure that they're doing okay. And I think we can probably all be guilty of becoming workaholics and not realizing how hard we're working ourselves, but without taking care of ourselves, we can't be the best version of ourselves anyway.
Yeah, you nailed it. The starting point is, you know, I say that it follows like a therapy route, right? Like we know it's there. So we know the support system is there, but you never really call the therapist until you wake up laying face down in the ditch. And so when coaches have that face down in the ditch moment, that could be getting fired. It could be that, you know, their brilliant tactical system that they've been told their whole badges is going to make them the next Jurgen Klopp and the next Guardiola doesn't work with the team, and they realize that there's maybe something else to it, or marriage breakdown, or just their general well-being. They notice their physiology changing, you know, particularly as you kind of go through those stages as you get into parenthood and, you know, 40s and things like that. So, yeah, there's generally a moment where they realize that the world isn't what they thought the world was. And so it starts with those well-being conversations. But again, those things are really in service of being able to perform at the high level that they expect of themselves. And so, again, that's the key. It's not well-being for well-being's sake. It's well-being for performance. And that means being able to do hard work that they want to do, because we're driven performers, most of us, at the top end of anything. It doesn't matter if it's business or the military or sport. It's like people are driven and excited by the challenges that they're facing. And so we can't just say do less for the sake of doing less. Mm-hmm. It's no, there's a better way that we can build performance structures around coaches so that they aren't zombies come April and May. Like if you've ever been on a webinar with coaches in April and May as a presenter, it's a bloody waste of time. Like they are just all zombies. They're looking into the background. They can't stay awake. And right. So again, we're actually the ones in human performance who are supposed to know how to get people through 9 months of competition, but we can't get ourselves through 9 months of competition. And so that's what I see my role as is I need you to be, when you need to be Mikel Arteta and it's down to the last game week 38, and you've got to win to try to win the title, you better be on and not be a zombie.
It's a really good way of putting it. I think, you know, but I guess my mind goes to, well, where does that conversation with self start? Because obviously, like you said, you know, we don't know what we don't know. We probably don't realize that how much help we need until we finally actually need it, right? Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that, you know, we could be doing, thinking about to be in order to keep tabs on it, or maintain a certain level of well-being and if you like, because I think that thing is key, right? It's just, where do we start with that?
Yeah, I can share the three questions that I start with, because I've wrote about them in Second Set of Eyes, my most recent book, which is about this work. And they're questions that any of us can ask ourselves about anything. So there's three questions, and they're not particularly revolutionary, but I think they start us on the right path. And it's, what are you trying to achieve? Like, and that needs to be really contextual, I think. So what are you trying to achieve here at this club, or with this group, or with this age group, or in your career, or whatever it is, whatever you choose, because it needs to be personal to you, because your motivators, if they are to be internal, they actually need to be your goals.
Mm.
And so if that is to win the championship, great. If that is to avoid relegation, great. If that is to get a promotion to the next age group, to be the lead, to be whatever, fine. I don't really care what the goal is, but tell me in an honest way what your goal is. The second question is, who do you want to be as you achieve that? And that is actually the killer question that gets most people in terms of what you're thinking about, like, where do we start? Because you can ask, do you want to be a dickhead? Do you want to not see your family at all? Do you want to be a coach who is known for stretching and supporting? Do you want to be like, who do you want to be as a human being? And when someone's forced to describe who they want to be, they're actually going to tell you the honest answer.
Mm.
And then that becomes your accountability piece. Once I've started to nail who I want to be, I really need to reflect on, was I that today? Was I that this month? Was I that in this game?
Mm.
Did I show up that way in this training session? And then the third question is, what's in the way right now? Mm. So now that you know the goal and who you want to be, what's in the way of that? And again, this isn't the killer question, but it can be one, is you have to go into that knowing that often it's you. It could be your boss, it could be someone else in the environment, it could be a parent, it could be parents, it could be the game that they can't get you your license fast enough, or you've been promoted ahead of, you know, where you should be, you know, whatever. It could be one of those things, but often case, there's something that you could be doing.
You see, yeah, it's quite interesting, because obviously you've gone really basically, You know, like you said, it's the accountability piece, right? You basically said, well, who do you want to be, right? Anytime you're not going to be that, I'm going to call you out on it, basically, right? But I guess the thing that I'm thinking right now is, we all have different perceptions. So sometimes that self-awareness piece, even in the best of moments and the best of intentions, with the best of intentions, might still not be aligned to what that behavior necessarily looks like, right? So... Mm-hmm. Thinking, if I didn't have a person on the outside reflecting with me and working through some of this stuff with me, where would I start in terms of holding that mirror up? Just a random thought.
I can give you a couple of easy examples, and again, this may or may not come down to resourcing, but I think most football environments would be equipped with this within the both the EFL and the Premier League, is there's nothing stopping you filming or recording yourself. And again, this isn't particularly revolutionary. Like, if you go to a Toastmasters course on how to be a great public speaker, do you know what they do? They record you and make you watch yourself back so that you can see yourself wringing your hands while you speak. And so it's heightening your awareness. You may not know what to do about that. You may not have noticed it in the moment, but there is an opportunity there if you want to really dig into, have you been the person that you thought you were? And particularly with audio as well, like you've got a podcast, I've had one in the past. It's shocking listening back to yourself and how much you say and how many ums you've got to cut out. Like I would cut all mine out. So it sounds like I speak really well, but that's because I get to edit my own audio. but again, just listening back to yourself. So it could be a team meeting. It could just be a staff meeting. How are you facilitating a staff meeting, you know, pre-training? It could be out on the field if you have those logistical elements to make that work. It could be a whole game. You know, I've got all of the above that are sent to me. So I can help people reflect. But the reality is you can also do those reflections yourself if you want to. And it's not to say you're going to be a master of self because you watch one video of yourself, but it's starting you on that path.
No, I think you're spot on though, because it's something I always say in some of the work that I do as a coach mentor myself when I'm working with coaches. It's almost like the first thing, I forgot, you know, typically the first interaction is always geared around the idea that, look, if you're unaware of it, you can't be mad at yourself for not getting it right. So always pretty much start with some sort of conversation around that, you know, up to this point, like it's not been your fault, but now that we're going to bring some awareness to some of the challenges you're facing and some of the things that are going on within the environment, if you choose not to act on them, the accountability is on you. You got to take ownership for that because you're now aware of the problems. And I think, you know, even in the way I coach and you support coaches, always goes back to that point. Look, if we can't identify the problem, we're never going to be able to address it. So let's start with just getting an awareness and an identification on what the problems are before we start to look at solutions. Because without the identification of them, we can't obviously solve them. But if with the identification we're halfway there, now we can just spend our time looking at problem, solution, A, B, C, D, however many solutions there may be. And then for us to decide, you know, if I line it back into your questions of who do you want to be and how do you want to behave essentially, then those solutions will be, you know, I guess married up against that framework, if you like.
Yeah, and that's my take on it. I completely disagree with the notion that there's a right and a wrong way of coaching. Outside of safety and ethics, I can't find one valid argument for right and wrong. You stepping onto the stage and choosing to be a coach gives you the opportunity to decide if you want to try and win the game this way, or you want to try and prepare a team this way that you think is going to beat the opposition. That's completely up to you. And so, again, I don't, it's not about judgment and saying right and wrong. I think it's about, is this what you were hoping to achieve? And you interrogate both you and your performance based on what you were hoping for. And so, you know, again, there's time for direct instruction. There's time for the coach being coach-led at times with particular teams. There's time for player-led. There's time for all of these different things. And so I think if we can start to also think about it as, geez, if I'm going to be recorded and someone's just going to tell me this was wrong and this was wrong and this was wrong and I should have done this, no one really wants to kind of sit there and go through that. But if it's tied to, was this what you were trying to achieve at this moment with your team? Yeah. The answer is yes. Great. Go for your life. And so it's not my place to tell other head coaches at the professional level how to coach their teams. Mm-hmm. It's to ask questions of their approach and just make sure that they're on track.
Yeah, definitely. I think the key thing in there is that it's obviously that, you know, we're having the clarity of what we're going after in the first place. But something that kind of just, you know, just made me think as you were talking there was that there is no right or wrong. And it's something that I reflect back on. And probably one of the biggest messages I picked up in my own journey was there's no right, there's no wrong necessarily, unless, like, and I completely agree with it, unless there's safety and ethics involved. However, Again, thinking back to my own journey, I got to a point where I thought, similar to you, what you said earlier, and I've cracked this. And then you get hit with something, probably, you know, very different to the scenario that you was in, but you get hit with something where it makes you think, oh, actually, maybe I haven't got this cracked. Or more importantly, in my case at the time, it reminded me of the things I'd forgotten. Because now the information I had or the knowledge I had relevant to the situation I was now in, I hadn't had to lean on you or use that message or that knowledge for several years because the environment and context I was working in didn't demand that type of coaching. It demanded the type of coaching I was giving in at the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
So,
yeah.
You know, for me, it's really important because obviously, like you said, in there being no right and wrong, I think it's just coaches becoming better at reflecting on, well, why is the coaching that I'm choosing to implement in this environment, why has it been successful if it has been?
Yeah, and it's really being led by that context. That's it. That's exactly right. And then the other piece that I would add onto that is there's going to be a reckoning come maybe sometime soon on what you described around everyone's already complaining about the sameness of football, right? But really, like, so there's a competitive landscape and teams get to choose how they play. Everyone's chosen high press, you know, play out from the back, all these kind of things. But what's about to happen is that a whole generation of footballers are going to have come through the academy system having only played against that model of football.
Yes.
You can already start to see it where now they're no longer intimidated by the fact that you've pushed up on them and you've created, it's essentially mental warfare. Like you've sped them up. They can't just slowly move it out from the back anymore. So when I look at someone like, you know, I'm an Arsenal fan. So like Emile Smith Rowe, he has all the tools to pass past you, dribble past you, know where your triggers have come from before you've even sent them. He's kind of not really intimidated. Now what we're going to have is thousands of those. And so if you're coming up and thinking you've got this new tactical version of this model and it's going to be great and you're going to be the next Guardiola, well, if you're playing that way, I'm not sure that's going to happen. The next iteration is going to be something past that. And some of the complaints that I hear is players now can no longer play against a low block.
No, it's true.
So some head coach is going to come along and go, well, I'm just going to play a low block and I've got the players to be able to do it, right? Yeah. Not necessarily someone down the bottom. It's going to be someone at the top is going to find a way to move the competitive needle. And so that could be that moment that you and I are talking about it, where you run into a bit of this is no longer working. Yeah. Because we also forget that the competitive landscape is constantly changing by design. That's why it's there. And so that can be those moments where you're like, oh, geez, none of this is working. It's not, I think I've got the players and I think my coaching's okay. But, you know, you've also got to keep an eye on the competition because that's ultimately why we're all here.
Yeah, 100%. Now, it's really interesting, obviously, because, you know, I fully agree with you. First and foremost, obviously, I think there is, you know, the generation of players that there is maybe now, the young players coming through now in comparison to what was 10 years ago and 10 years before, that definitely are, for better or worse, different. And I think you're spot on. You know, having worked in academies myself and been around a lot of clubs where I've been working with coaches in academies, you do see they literally all play the same way. They all literally play the same way. And it's just like, well, one thing's for certain, 99% of these guys ain't going to be playing in the Premier League where this football might be present. So they probably are going to have to learn how to play against that low block. They are probably going to have to learn how to play with that ball in the air more than it is on the floor, right? Those are some of the things that they're going to have to do. And I think coaches probably, you know, I think you're right in saying that they're going to have to decide to play differently based on what the tactical trend is at the time. But sometimes it's not just following suit, but actually going against that to try and find the hole in it. But that's been the game, isn't it? You know, in the last however long it's been going on, it's just swings around us. It just goes around in cycles. I wouldn't be surprised if in five, six years' time we're having a conversation and we see the 4-4-2 coming back in. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I think it will happen. I think it's just whether or not we're attuned into it well enough and understanding why it's working right now, what the pros and what the cons are, because even in the, you know, even at the top level or even lower down, you are seeing that has a direct influence on it. But I digress. I'm going back to the point of the coaches now and thinking about the coaches specifically. So let's look at it, because, you know, I'm big on the idea of coach mentoring. Like yourself, you know, I sometimes get messages around potential working with coaches and things like that. And the first question I always go back to them, and I'll be interested to get your thoughts on this, is what is it that you're looking for support with and why me? Because I think that bit is really key. And the reason why I want to highlight that and really kind of unpack this a little bit is because I think there's a lot of coaches out there, not their fault at all, but obviously there'll be coaches out there looking for support, but they're looking for support potentially in the wrong places. And it's often through the guise of, well, this person's got experience, so they must know what they're doing. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's a difficult one because there's no, you know, centralized database or website or anything with, you know, who the best people are and who's right for you at this time in your coaching. And so, yeah, you naturally go to who you know or someone that you've looked up to. And I don't think those are bad necessarily. There are certainly, it's like any other form of coaching, right? Like you and I, mentoring is just coaching. We just coach coaches instead of players. Mm. Just like I have a personal trainer. He's a coach. He coaches me in the gym. And so it's all coaching, just applied to different people. And so invariably, there are going to be better coaches for coaches than just like there are better coaches for players. And yeah, unfortunately, at the moment, they're difficult to find. But I completely agree with your sentiment around trying to find the right person for you. And that may take speaking to 20 people to decide. And I'll give you an example. I am not interested in working with anyone who's not trying to do something that hasn't been done before. So that's just what lights me up. I'm interested in the most difficult things in the game. And so that's what I'm looking for when someone calls me up, is when I say, like, what are you trying to achieve? If they don't come up with some sort of, I want to build a juggernaut, I want to try to win the most at this club that's ever been done, I want to create the greatest environment in this part of the world or this sport or whatever, that's what I'm good at, is helping really push the barrel. But there's going to be a million better coaches than me that do other things. And it might be, in meetings and teaching how to teach and things like that. And so, yeah, again, I think ask around, like talk to different people, talk to a lot of different people about mentoring or coaching you, so that you can really try to understand who's going to be the best one for you.
Mm. I think it's really important, because obviously within that is recognizing that, and this is a question I always throw at coaches as well, you know, what are you good at? What are you good at? But it's very, I'm very specific and very, very targeted in how I ask the question, because it's a case of not what are you the best at, but what's your skills? What are you strong at? What are your skills and attributes? And understanding that me and Cody could have the same skills in terms of our strengths, but it doesn't mean that we have to be operating on the same level. It's just a strength we both hold, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think that bit's really key, because I think sometimes, especially when you're looking at, you know, coaching being such an industry where it's rapidly growing, right? You're getting more and more coaches, they're getting younger and younger, they're getting wider ranging in terms of the experiences and the variety of coaches that we're seeing. That, yeah, the perception could be that it's even harder to define a USP for yourself, right? And I think it's really important that the USP can be something that someone else has got. It's just something that's unique to you. That's just if I pick you over someone else as an example. But I guess within that, how do we manage it? Because obviously, in terms of the, obviously when you're working with coaches yourself and you're looking at, right, it's very much about self. But in the competitive nature of the industry that we're in, it's also trying to stay on top of things to make sure that we don't get, you know, fall behind, if you like. So how do you manage them in, how, you know, what kind of support might you give a coach, or what kind of considerations might a coach have to take on board in thinking, right, I've got to look after myself, I've got to know where I'm at, but I've also got to be in the right frame of mind and really just trying to perform to make sure I don't get left behind. Where would you start in terms of guidance for coaches on that?
Yeah, that's an easy one for me. My whole thing, if you jump on my website for 2 seconds, I push coaches to think of themselves as performers. So what that means is essentially the opposite of most of the things that we've been doing. Most of what we've been doing has been just kind of thoughtless, bravery, like take it upon myself. I'm going to take on all the decisions, all the coaching, all the stress, and I'm just going to work 20 hours a day. And if I work for 20 hours a day for about 40 years, I might get my chance, right? That's like the kind of typical English like way of approaching it. But if you think about yourself as a performer, you start to look for these little gaps where it might be a 15-minute period for some rejuvenation before you walk into a meeting. It might be that you identify that reading a book is something that calms you down. It might be that you...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Maybe with some help, realize that you can get home to cook dinner for your family or get home to pick your kids up from school, because that just means the world to you. And, you know, there's a million different ways you can go with this, but essentially you have to start with the realization that you are a performer. And I'll go a level deeper than that. Is what that looks like is really... A coach has three primary skills: their awareness or their attentional capacity. Their, what are you aware of? What are you looking at? What are you seeing in the environment, out on the field, in a meeting? Are you listening for how something is said? So your awareness, your communication in all its various forms, including to yourself. Like self-talk is a form of communication. It's not psychology, like they'll tell you. And decision-making, so awareness, communication, and decision-making. All three of those act like a gas tank. They degrade throughout the day, right? So your awareness is horrific at nighttime. If you've ever driven to work in the morning, like pay attention to how alert you are versus how alert you are at 5 o'clock when you're driving home after a day. And you don't even really need to have done anything. Your communication degrades throughout the day. Your decision-making degrades throughout the day. When you add stress, threats, poor mood, lack of sleep, all of those things degrade. So we're putting ourselves into an environment where we're degrading the primary skills that we have as performers. It's like asking a player to run a half marathon before going out and playing a game the next day. And so when you start to think about yourself, you can find these little gaps for you as a performer and say, no, I actually do need a nap here. And this is a great time investment for me to be better when I need to go back on the pitch at 4 o'clock with the 15s. than if I was just up at 5 a.m. and just trying to ram through it all and work 20 hours a day because I'm gallant.
Yeah, in essence, you've got a stamina for your strengths is what you're saying.
Yeah, and
it's
that's like
a video game, right, with the life bar.
Yeah.
Starting to waver off. But okay, so then effectively...
But the only way we've tried to conquer that is if someone's tired or burnt out, we say, take an extra week of your holidays.
Mm.
That's it. That's the only solution we've come up to so far. But it's really, there's points for rejuvenation throughout the year, throughout the day, that we could be looking at if we want to think of ourselves as performers. Yeah.
Mm. And what about yeah, it's something that's interesting that it just reminds me. So I've recently started martial arts, jiu-jitsu.
Cool. I say
recently, but in the last year or so. And for me, that's exactly where I get my recharge. Like, I literally max out. Obviously, I'm grappling, I'm sparring and whatever, but from a mental standpoint, I'm now clear, ready to go. So, and literally when people ask me about it, I mean, I often refer to it as it feels like meditation because I have to be fully present in that moment. Otherwise, I'm just getting beaten up.
Right, yeah.
So it's like finding myself fully present in that moment. So I guess, now, what are your thoughts on coaches finding practices in terms of, you know, obviously in my case I use jiu-jitsu as that, but in the form of meditating, how useful do you think that is, and how often do you kind of delve into that sort of stuff with your coaches? Because it's something that I often say to coaches, some you just need to take a time out somewhere where you can just be with yourself.
Yeah, like I said, I kind of tend to start in like the wellness space, and I would put it in that bucket. I think the key to it isn't just prescribing meditation. It's finding out how someone meditates. So, you know, again, unfortunately the word has kind of taken on this meaning of sitting down with your legs crossed and going, right? It's not that. So, you can be in a meditative state going on a 10K run. You can be in a meditative state like you're talking about doing jiu-jitsu. So, you know, I think it's about trying to find where that is in their life. And oftentimes it's been pushed off to the side and it's an activity that they don't necessarily do anymore. And so reintroducing that as a starting point, and if you want to go further and actually meditate and that's fine, we can go there as well. But I think it's really about, like I said, is it reading a book? Is it doing jiu-jitsu? Is it going for a walk in nature? Is it seeing your kids? And then that opens a real Pandora's box into the mindfulness space, which I think is probably the most powerful thing that we have at our disposal. Which is really what you're describing, needing to be ultra present, otherwise you're getting beaten up.
Yeah, literally, yeah. And it has definitely supported me in other ways. So, like, for instance, when I go back into my coaching environment, so, or if I'm working with a coach, I do find myself almost carrying that presence and that concept of present, being present, across into other realms, right? Where
I bet
those little things that you talked about earlier in terms of how they're behaving, but I'm you know, it got me thinking earlier when you were talking about it, is there's one thing about your perception of it, but how is it being perceived and viewed by others in the environment? So for instance, if I'm watching back my recording of me working as a coach or whatever that might be, I'm more interested in how other people are receiving it and their body language and their facial expressions, rather than necessarily just my performance in that respect. So I think, you know, now I do become a lot more attuned to, okay, well, actually, when I'm in the environments, when I'm actually working, before I even get to the footage or have an opportunity to watch any all of it, how's everyone perceiving this?
If you get really skilled at mindfulness, true mindfulness, because unfortunately, again, there's this like Western version of it, which isn't the version. It exists in ancient cultures in the East, in Indigenous Australia. It's been around for tens of thousands of years. It's not like this new psychological phenomenon because Western psychologists became interested in it. If you get really skilled at it, you know as soon as you've said it that you've said it wrong.
Yes.
You don't need the film.
Yeah.
You know as soon as it comes out of your mouth that you've missed either a syllable or you've said it too harshly, and you can actually stop yourself in the moment and say, I said that wrong. Sorry, let me try again. You know, and so again, that takes a lot of time to build up to that kind of recognition, but that's what really skilled mindfulness is about, is that you can stop yourself in the moment.
I'm smiling because I'm just thinking to myself, okay, cool. That is often quite challenging, and it takes, it takes years of experience to get to that point where you can actually check yourself in that respect. But I think that's only coupled with the fact that you're going back to your questions earlier, and the word that was jumping out at me while you were speaking was clarity, right? It was all about clarity. Try and make it, and I often say to coaches, and it's interesting, try and make everything as black and white as possible. Yes, there's going to be some gray, but where there's gray, try and separate into the black and white, because everything becomes a lot easier to kind of sift through, work through, and obviously implement. So in that sense, do you think that maybe there is a benefit to coaches having that black and white? Because sometimes as you were speaking, I'm thinking as well, in order to catch myself in the moment, there has to be some gray. And the gray comes from me being able to perceive how the person's received it. Because that's going to change, right? It's going to be dependent on the individual, the context, the moment, the time of the day of the week, whatever it might be in terms of all the variables and the considerations that might be able to impact on them. Or do you think it's... because, you know, there's often, you know, we've also got the saying, treat others how you want to be treated, but actually not everyone wants to be treated how you want to be treated, right? So, you know, although we might think we're doing things in a positive and a constructive and a, just in a positive manner, that might not necessarily be the case in terms of how that person receives it. So I guess, you know, is there a benefit for us to kind of maybe have a lack of clarity then?
Well, I guess it's, you know, in terms of your environment, it's that conversation around how much can someone, you know, be an individual, like be themselves within an environment. And this is like a huge theoretical question, right? Like, and I don't know if I have an answer to it, but, you know, I think what we're after in this gray or black and white is ultimately it's around conversations, opportunities to generate conversations. So if it is conversation about black and white or gray, I think that's a helpful conversation. So have I said that too harshly to you? Or even just checking at the end of a meeting, you know, it could be with a player or a staff member or another coach around, what did you hear me say?
I like that question.
Because why can't you just say that at the end of every meeting that you have? So this is how I understand what I've said, but just replay it back to me just to make sure that we've actually heard the same thing. Or I've said what I thought I said. You know, so again, I think the mindfulness comment was really around an awareness that you haven't done something the way you wanted to do it. That's a separate conversation in terms of what someone else has heard. And those, again, I think are met by really good questions. It's like, what have you heard me say here? Like, what do you think the next task that you need to do is after hearing me say that? And so... Maybe the answer to your question is I still think there's room for both grey and white and black, or all three.
Yeah. And I'm just, again, I'm just reflecting as you're asking those questions, and I'm always thinking to myself, yeah, I'm always out there checking to understand it. So it is very much, you know, a different version of that question, rather than only asking, you know, what have you heard there, is what's your understanding of what I've said? Because I think that piece, Ken, I always underline it and follow it up with, it's my curiosity that's in action here. It's nothing. It's not a judgment. It's a curiosity in action, because I want to make sure that you're, not because there is a right or wrong, but I just want to make sure that we're on the same page, so that whichever page we're on, we can work from that page, as opposed to I'm trying to get you to this page or you're trying to get me to that page. Because I think that bit is really key. So I guess in terms of when you're working with your coaches, then I'm really, really keen to kind of explore that a little bit more and understand. Right at the top of the conversation, you said, what do you want? What's the goal that you're going after? But if the goal is too broad and too, I guess, long-term to start with, how does that impact on things? Because you've got some coaches, I'm thinking about some of the coaches that work, oh, yeah, I want to work in the Premier League. Yeah, you're just starting your journey now. So what would be your guidance and support around that coach who's just thinking too far ahead?
Yeah, well, I think it's really coming into it kind of non-judgmentally, but this is where the skill comes in, is, okay, well, where do you go from there? Because that's not really something that you have any control over, or, you know, working in the Premier League, I don't know, it depends where you are, but again, there's going to be sub goals underneath that are probably more important on getting to first. And so it would really be stepping out if it's too far ahead or too much of a pipe dream or whatever, which, again, I tend to work with people who are shooting for the stars. The next task becomes, well, what are the interim steps? So, you know, if a coach does want to work in the Premier League, great. Who am I to try to scupper that dream for you? It's my job to help. But what do we need to do to get there? Or where do you think you need to go? Or what additional skills do you think you need? You know, if you look at the landscape right now, what do people have that maybe you can go past? So maybe we go and aim for a completely separate goal that allows you to skip the queue instead of just being another one in the queue. And so it's really directing them to a more tangible goal that's still motivating, because that's what goals are supposed to be. Still keep the pipe dream, but I think make sure you understand the steps to get there.
Definitely. Okay. So just building on that, obviously thinking about some of the experiences that you've had as a coach, mentor, essentially, hasn't it? You mentioned briefly around some of the challenges that exist around it, some of the similarities and the challenges rather than set common challenges, if you like. At what point, I guess from your perspective, do you get to a point where, if at all any, you identify that you're no longer that person that needs to, that can support that individual? Because often, you know, I work from a perspective of, I want people to work with me, not because they feel like they need me, because they've enjoyed the experiences, the impact I've been able to have with them.
Oh yeah, I'm with you on that. And I think you can generally tell when it's starting to feel like work for them, like more work, or that they're not enjoying it. Or it's not either a priority or what they thought it was when they got into it. I think you can kind of get a bit of a sense for that, just like you can with players, right? Where you're like, they're talented, but there's just something in them that's not, they're not fully into that. And so, you know, look, I've also built a lot of my systems and structures and conversations to be around, this isn't going to be forever. Like, it probably shouldn't be forever. And so as much as we can sit here and say, we're going to work together for the rest of our lives. And, you know, so I build out, like, all my notes are built for them to keep. And, you know, if I offboard a coach, it's about, you know, hey, like, take these to the next person that you work with and say, like, this is the work that I've already done. And here's, you know, all these things. So, yeah, look, that's one of the things with coaching is, I think that's true of everyone, including all the people that I mentioned before, like my gym trainer. Like, he probably shouldn't be my trainer in the gym for the rest of my life. It's just part of what we do. Sometimes you need change, and yeah, I'm okay with that. As long as they're having a good time while they're with me.
Yeah, no, that's spot on. I think it's really key though, isn't it? I think I've often come to find that, and I never quite thought about it the way that you've just put it though, but effectively, when it started to feel like it was, I guess, more work, then it probably was time to, in essence, call it quits or signpost them elsewhere. And I think that's one of the challenges, obviously. But I think it's also one of the key accountabilities of the mentor in that process, understanding when you can offer guidance and support and when you can maybe pass them on to someone else or signpost them elsewhere to get that appropriate guidance and support as you know, what they need. So I guess, you know, it is a very personalized approach. It's very tailored to the individual and recognizing their challenges and how you can maybe fit into that. And I think it's really important fitting into that rather than trying to fit them into another way of working, if you like. Meeting them where it's at is, you know, where they're at fundamentally is probably the best way to put it. Yeah. So I guess, you know, in doing that, what are some of the key messages that you'd maybe hope coaches listening to this can start to think about around whether, you know, whether they feel like they're in that space where their face is down in the ditch, whether they feel like they're in that space where actually it's getting close to being that. Because really we want to try and get coaches in a position where they're better at identifying these things before they hit them. And it just lands like a ton of bricks. Because I think, you know, at that point, some people don't even make it back, right? It's too far gone. You know, I'm thinking about a few different coaches that I've worked with along the years who've had those hard times, and maybe they didn't have the right type of support or the right guidance or right understanding of maybe where to start in terms of that self-reflection piece and that looking after self piece. They end up driving them out of the industry because of how much hard work it was. So, you know, what would be your advice or your thoughts around some key questions or thought and considerations that you would want coaches to make in the first instance?
Well, I think the first one is, can I get better? And the reason for that is I actually think there's a lot of coaches who think that they can't get better. Like, they think they're at the top of their game. You know, and so if you think that, then again, non-judgmentally, that's fine. Go for your life. And because I think those people are going to be the ones that maybe they're often forced into having a mentor that they don't want. And I think that can be just as damaging as anything. And the ones that do want help, again, I think part of the response that I received from writing The Tough Stuff about the emotional toll was I had this kind of sentiment that coaches were offering was, I had no idea how many coaches were dealing with this same problem. And so if you are laying face down in the ditch, or you're maybe got a feeling that something's a bit wrong or it's not quite landing how you wanted, the first thing is just know that basically everyone, whether it's in football or rugby or cricket or Aussie rules or rugby league or basketball or ice hockey or field hockey, like basically every coach in the world is dealing with, to some degree, the exact same thing that you're dealing with. You know, I gave a presentation on skill acquisition to some AFL coaches last weekend, And one of the quotes I used was Mikel Arteta's, you know, you can't train them in the zoo and expect them to play in the jungle on Sunday.
Mm.
And I used it as a, he's grappling with, we have to prepare them to play the game. He's doing skill acquisition, working through skill acquisition problems, just like we are at under nines, right? And so anyway, there should be a sense of community in that. And I think that's where the asking for help idea comes from at its core, is there are a lot of coaches going through the same thing, and you don't need to kind of suffer alone. And so it might not be full mentoring, but maybe you call a friend from another sport and say, hey, like, this is just something that I've been dealing with. Have you been through the same thing?
Mm.
And oftentimes they will say, oh my God, I've either been going through it this week, or I've definitely been through it, or I can offer you some advice. And so that's my advice is, you know, if you do want to get better and you are struggling with something, I think recognizing that there are a lot of people in the same shoes as you, and you don't need to go fully, you know, call Cody Royal up the kind of deep end, let's develop a whole program. It could just be have a conversation with a peer first. And then lastly, I would offer that if you do want to get a coach or a mentor, just know that the evidence is on your side. So Emma Hayes has a whole chapter in her book called Truth Tellers, which is about all the people that she calls when she's dealing with something as a coach. And Pep Guardiola has had Manel Estiarte by his side since 2008, everywhere he's been. Sean McVay just talked about in the NFL how a coach reached out to him and said, that press conference was off, man. Like, you're about to burn out, essentially. You're about to flame out. I can help you. President Obama had a coach. The head of the US military has a coach. Steve Jobs had a coach. You've actually got all of the people that you look up to on your side to say, this is for you.
Stand on the shoulders of giants, right? Go to those with experience. You can learn from the experiences of others rather than having to go through it yourself. I think there is time where you have to go through it yourself. But again, even in the midst of those problems and those challenges, when you're in them, if you can understand the problem that you're dealing with, then you're in a better placed position to try and identify solutions for the challenge. And I think, you know, even going back to, you know, even just referencing Emma Hayes in the book and the Truth Tellers, that's really what it is. It's someone who's willing to be honest with you and just take it, just tell you as it is. You know, then there's no, and this is obviously in the absence of obviously footage or things like that, that might be what you need, a conversation. And it's just opening conversations with other coaches. And I think one of the biggest things I always say to coaches when I'm working with them is, how often are you having coaching conversations? Which is not about the X's and O's, as you put it earlier. It's not about the X. How often are you coaching conversations? You understand that everyone's on this journey. And it just looks slightly different for different people in their journeys based on the environment that they're working in. But if you break down and look at the challenges, they're all the same. Especially if you're depending on what realm of the industry you're in, whether at the elite end or not so, just speak to other coaches around you. And obviously sometimes it might be best speaking to people who've got no idea about the sport.
Yeah,
that's what I've found sometimes, that, you know, I'm just speaking to people because they're so authentic in their conversations around whatever you're discussing, that they'll ask you things that someone in the sport they'll never consider. you know, like, why do you do that? Why do you do this? Have you ever thought about this? It's like, no, I haven't thought about it. And it can be mind-blowing and eye-opening at times. So I think it's really important to try and get someone around you that's willing, you know, I think first and foremost, willing to have an open and honest conversation with you. Willing to, even if it's just willing to ask you a few questions that even they might not have the answers to, but they've got questions off of the back of what you've shared with them. And it comes back to that piece, right? That communication piece, being willing to share with someone in the first instance and being open to receive the response rather than the feedback. I think being open and willing to receive a response, because sometimes I find if you look at it as feedback, subconsciously you're also identifying it as a judgment. And that's not what obviously, what we're necessarily having to go after all the time. Sometimes it's just a reflective practice and someone to hold the mirror up for you. Cody, I really appreciate your thoughts on it, man. Really, really, good to get a bit of an insight on your journey and some of the work that you've done, and even some consideration. You've started to make me think a little bit more as well around how I engage with coaches. But any final thoughts or considerations for you?
Well, just to bolt on to the end of what you said there, I would say, if you're a coach, take the accountability for your development. There are coach developers around, there are people like yourself around, particularly in football. Like there's so many people that are really invested and doing great work to help coaches. And what I found in my experience at workshops has been that it's often an afterthought, to your point. It's kind of like, when we ran a workshop where coach developers were part of the coaching team and none of the coaches really knew how to use one. So like go and ask for specific things, like take upon yourself as the coach to say, can you come and observe and watch this one piece? Same as if you want a mentor, like take it upon yourself to go and speak to 20 people or however many you need to get the right person for you. But it's all to say Luke Skywalker has to go to Yoda. Yoda doesn't come to Luke. Right. So if you want to become the master, you're Luke, you've got to go and seek out Yoda. And so take it upon yourself to make those moves, because Yoda's not just going to magically appear. He's not coming to you.
I love that, because I think it's just, again, for a coach, just be more curious and be more willing to take a chance and having a conversation with someone. Sometimes you might, I think the beauty of it for me has always been that sometimes having the conversations maybe confirms your knowledge. Sometimes it challenges it. And sometimes it gives you something different to think about. But the biggest thing that I've learned, and it kind of ties into this, is in my journey, I've always found that I thrive off people questioning, because it gives me the perfect opportunity for me to justify to myself why I'm deciding to do what I've done, why I'm choosing to believe the things I believe. Not because they're necessarily right or wrong, but because I want clarity on the rationale and the justification for my behaviours. It's brilliant, Cody. I really appreciate it. Maybe just a bit of an insight around where people can kind of get in touch with you on your website, any social media handles.
Yeah, I'm very easy to find with a name like Cody Royal. So CodyRoyal.com, and then same, just the regular handle, Cody Royal on Twitter, LinkedIn. But the easy way to find me is the website. It's got all the links there and books and all the things that we've talked about. But more importantly, just appreciate having a conversation with someone like yourself. And again, thank you for creating what you've created to help coaches, because you've kind of stood up and said, I'm willing to come and help. So a huge admiration for you.
I really appreciate that, Cody. Guys, make sure you check out Cody's page, his website, and obviously look out for the books as well. Cody, really appreciate your time today. I much appreciate it.
Well, there you have it, guys. Another episode of the Coaches Network podcast, where our aim is to bring the world of athlete, talent, and personal development together to just one platform. And you can help us with that mission right now by sharing this episode or any of your favorite episodes with everyone that you can think of. You can tag us in those mentions as well on Instagram at The Coaches Network or on Twitter at The Coaches Net. We look forward to hearing from you. Let us know what you thought about today's episode. And until next time, guys, take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.